several of us in the caucus, including those of the Men's Health Caucus, strongly supported that. There's been no major health association that has ever had a major meeting on Native American and Alaskan Native health. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I suspect it won't. But there's always 2015. All right, our next speaker is talking about redefining health priorities and improving health promotion for military communities. This is Jill Herzog, who's at Booz Allen Hamilton in Rockville, Maryland. Ms. Herzog is a principal with Booz Allen Hamilton, where she leads the firm's marketing capabilities. She is an award-winning communications professional with more than 20 years of experience directing multi-year social marketing and health communication projects for government and corporate clients. Ms. Herzog is highly skilled in strategy development, something those of us in the public health community should learn a lot more about, campaign implementation, market research, materials development, dissemination, and public-private partnerships. She is an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Arts and Sciences, and she is a very much in-demand speaker, and we are thrilled to have her expertise for us this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know how I got much in demand, but I'm definitely in that population that you spoke of before, the menopausal, so I need glasses, and big giant notes that are like, you know, my children laugh at me. So it's interesting to come after both of your presentations because mine is not a study. I don't deliver any data. What I'm really here to talk about is an audience that most people don't think of as an audience, because the military is a culture all of its own, and even though there are African Americans, Hispanics, Latinos, Native Americans in the military, when you're in the military, you almost lose some of that identity, and you become the culture of whatever service it is that you are serving, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, that doesn't matter. They all have very specific cultures. And when we got chosen to speak this topic in the men's health section, it was like, much of the military and 18 to 24-year-old men, it kind of made sense. But it dawned on me, listening, that the focus of what I'm talking about is going to be a little different. But it is about 18 to 24-year-old men, but it's about men in the military and not necessarily where they were born or what their how their parents raised them. There is some of the culture of men in general that we're dealing with, but take all of the problems and issues that you've just heard and now give them a gun and put them out in the middle of nowhere and have IEDs go off and be 18 years old and lose, you know, either some part of your body or your mind, depending on whether you've got a physical injury or an invisible injury, and then come back home and try to reintegrate and be regular. So a lot of these health issues are the same, but because they're in the military, they have even another layer. So you just keep adding fuel to the fire, and it becomes harder and harder to address some of these very, you know, similar ones. It's tobacco, it's obesity, it's, you'll see, it's all the same stuff. But, you know, I look at it a little bit like, you know, a recipe for Mexican food. It either sour cream's on the top or at the bottom, but everything's got the sour cream or the cheese, it's just where you put it. So I'm going to ask you to sort of turn your brains a little bit off from the data and think about the people side of this and think about the humanity side of it, and sort of roll with me because I'm a communications person and not necessarily a scientist or a researcher. So I just wanted to sort of lay that down because it does feel a little different. What we do in the military and the programs that we're going to talk to you about today really focus on health promotion, which I'm sure you're all aware of. But how many people are familiar with social marketing? Good. So for those that are not, I'll give you a quick little rundown, a little bit the difference between health promotion and social marketing. But the programs that we're going to outline will give you examples of how we define priority areas within a military service, programs that do extra special collaboration to make them work, how we implement those strategies with very specific audiences, and how we might evaluate some of the programs that we do. Again, a lot of them are communications evaluation and not necessarily research and data. And then how we streamline that information to try to improve access, because we hear a lot, especially in the Army National Guard, where they don't have bases, they don't come home to a family, of their military brethren. They go back to the job that they left to go and do their assignment. So they're just like you and I. They come back home, and the wife is like, you've been gone, here's the baby, and the boss is like, here's your work, where have you been? You've been on vacation. So there's a lot of very unique aspects to dealing with the military. So I we'll do a little quick health promotion is really how people can take control over their own health and how we can influence and inform and educate people about the topics and make people aware, whereas social marketing is really driving at a behavior change. So how do we get people to wear their seatbelts? You know, is it policy? Is it purse strings? Is it personal? What is it? How are we going to get somebody to eat 5 fruits and vegetables a day? We deploy commercial marketing strategies. You know, we can sell soap just like we sell don't smoke. And it's kind of, it's an old, theory. Social marketing's been around for a long time. Lots of different models, lots of different theories. Can't go into those all here, but if you're interested in them, you can find them all online. And really, the name of the game is picking the right theory for your audience and making sure that the research that you have and the behavior change that you're looking for are correctly matched so that you're giving the right message at the right time with the right delivery, the person who's giving the message. So they're a little different, but there's health promotion in social marketing. And I'm also trying to be a good communications expert, and there are tweetable moments, so make my kids proud, somebody send a tweet, like mom's cool or something, I don't know.
That's the big thing that's changed in social media.
Yes.
Social media, just the explosion.
Yes, and social media, I stand up in front of classes and people are like, is social media social marketing? And no, social marketing is a theory, social media is a tactic. So, but we do try to be hip, and so somebody, I'm going to count on you to send something so that, my kids don't think I'm a total loser. So now I'm going to go to my notes because I'm also old. So we looked at some of the programs that we have done over the last couple of years with different agencies. One of the programs is not ours, and that's Operation Live Well, but it gave us a good example, so we put it in there. I'm going to talk about each one of these, and I'm going to focus on them sort of as they relate to the learning objectives that were set out. What we know in the military is that healthcare spending increased by 300% over the past decade, and it's rising to more than 50. How do I go back? That's okay. I can stay there. $50 billion in 2012. And we were also dealing with a readiness problem and a resilience problem. How do we really get the military personnel ready before the blast, during the blast, and after the blast? It's really a continuum. And you can't focus on one side of it without the other. Because if you don't take care of the soldier when they come home, what good was it? I mean, we really need to be there sort of the whole life cycle of a war fighter. So our first program that we're going to look at is the Navy Marine Corps Public Health Center. The Health Command for the Navy Marine Corps looked at three big programs that existed. The National Prevention Strategy, which we all know came out of HHS, and Total Force Fitness was a big initiative in the military for many years, and the Navy 21st Century Sailor Marine Initiative. And we didn't have a lot of money for research, so this was really our platform. This is what we had to delve into. We had to find the common denominators around this research and around these platforms to create sort of a sustainable health and well-being prevention program for sailors and Marines. And the target areas are the little icons down at the bottom. So they decided that their health and wellness program for Navy and Marine would be healthy eating, active living, tobacco-free living, reproductive and sexual health, psychological and emotional well-being, injury and violence-free living, and preventing drug abuse and excessive alcohol use. So not very different than our general population. It's pretty much the same for most men, and we're really dealing with that 18 to 24-year-old population. Taya, did yours go to 34 in the Navy, or was it the 18 to 24 mostly as well?
We expanded 34 the second year.
because the Navy tend to have older than the Army. Army has the younger population, Navy, Marine might have the Navy, the older population. So we developed a suite of materials and information that, you know, specifically focused on these areas. And what was very interesting is even though HHS has been a part of DOD's initiatives for a long time, they never publicly went out and launched a program together. And they actually launched this program with the Surgeon General and the Navy Surgeon General. And it was one of the first times that has ever happened. And it made a big difference because it reminds the American public that the military is not this thing that's off to the side. They are men and women like you and I, and even though they have their own culture, they are citizens of our country, and they need to be managed, and their health needs to be managed, and their lifestyle choices need to be looked at and focused on, just like yours and mine. Who sits around and talks about the military at the dinner table if you don't have a relative in the military? I came to work with the military. I had nobody in my family. Generations, I think my great-grandfather might have fought, but other than that, I didn't really have access to that. I really didn't understand the plight of the military family. I didn't really understand the plight of what happens to that life cycle and when you come home and what you're expected to do. And, you know, multiple deployments and multiple wars makes for very tough circumstances for these men and women. So each one of the services, you'd think it's kind of weird, why do they all have to do different things? Well, they all have different cultures, and they all go about the problem in a different way. And they all have different barriers to health messaging, and you have to be very specific. And, you know, Marines only want to talk to Marines, by the way. You know, we did focus groups. We asked the guys, well, who would you listen to with health information? And the Army was like, my wife, my mother, my sister. The Marines were like, if my wife or my mother or my sister gave me some advice, I'd be getting a new wife, a new mother, and a new sister. So, you know, subtle things like that. We couldn't use the family to interject messages to the Marines. It had to be Marine to Marine. End of story. So we learned a lot about them. In terms of collaboration in the military and specifically in military programs, this particular initiative, which is called Operation, I guess it's the base, there's two things going on. So Operation Live Well is a large DOD initiative, and then they're doing a demonstration project right now. And the demonstration project launched probably, I think, earlier this year, and we're about six months in. And this was the first time that DOD really went full hog in trying to find a better way to cast their message more broadly. So even though the services have to be specific, they needed a larger platform to get their message out. And I think Operation Live Well is going to have a long life, and I think there's going to be many small campaigns that come off of this. I don't think we are, I don't know how to go backwards. I was trying to go back one. Try this one? Yeah, all right, so I want to go, it is right. I wanted to give you the names of the groups that are working with Operation Live Well. It's the Department of Agriculture, Center for Nutrition and Policy, the military, the DOD Office of Military Community and Family Policy, the United States Army Public Health Command, the Navy Marine Corps Public Health Command, and the Human Performance Resource Center. So this was, they set their goals to reduce obesity, decrease tobacco, and they launched this demonstration project called Healthy Bases. And these Healthy Bases will follow the population and do extensive research and evaluation and outcome metrics around those three basic areas. But without the funding from all of those areas, they wouldn't have gotten it, because really the focus in the military has been readiness and suicide prevention is where a lot of the money has gone. So I think we're going to hear a lot more about Operation Live Well and how this collaboration is going to take off. I think one of the most fun, it was upsetting to me as a public health person, when the Navy wanted to take a look at their Right Spirit campaign, which was an alcohol prevention campaign, a basically don't drink campaign, which was not working in the Navy. they came, you know, to Booz Allen to look at why wasn't Right Navy, you know, the right spirit, why wasn't it working, and why were sailors still drinking, and why were they, you know, losing their uniforms and, you know, ending up not being able to serve anymore. It was because the campaign didn't have the right message for them. It was not really about not drinking. It was about being proud of who they were and what they had earned and not losing that as a result of bad choices. So as a preventionist, I'm like, oh, but wait, you're not going to tell them to not drink, or you're not going to tell them to drink in moderation? And they're like, no, because they told us that it's really about maintaining, like, we trust you to keep your uniform and to do your job. So be careful. Do it in moderation and responsibly, but those aren't even really the messages. The message is be proud of who you are and don't lose the right to be the sailor that you became or the Marine. And I think that the three messages in the middle were the three concepts. Don't go overboard. It's not worth it. And keep what you've earned. And keep what you've earned was what resonated. And this is really about the research. The Navy gave us a year, which is literally unheard of in social marketing. You're lucky if you get 3 months. And you're lucky, like the first campaign I talked about, they gave us three studies or three programs, and they said, this will be your platform. We have no research money. We have no evaluation money. Just go out and tell them what to do and give them the messages. The Navy did it the right way. They gave us a year. We did a literature review, a materials audit, a baseline media report. And I'm happy to say 6 months later, there's a 51% decrease during the worst part was over Labor Day and Memorial Day for people getting arrested in the Navy and being suspended and all sorts of things happening. There's a 51% decrease of those happening in this last holiday season. The research showed that, so here's how the messaging came out, that sailors were responsible and that they were adults, and we needed to sort of recognize them for that. It's like good parenting. You know, when you think about these messages, it's really, you know, catch them being good, remind them who they are and why they're serving their country in the first place, acknowledge that they've worked hard to get where they are, and remind them that one bad decision can lead to very serious consequences. And that was really the game changer. It wasn't about don't drink, because they're going to drink anyway. So how do you make it work? Here are some of the output measures. Again, this one was around research. So the other one was collaboration. The one before that, so that's the only reason why there's a research slide here. It gives you some of the metrics that we count in communications campaigns. They're a little different than what you would count in a basic, you know, scientific study. But it's how many unique visitors do you get to a website, how many people have downloaded the materials for the campaign, what kinds of deep social media interactions are we getting? You know, are people taking our message and retweeting it? Are they posting it and sending it along? The campaign's only been around for a year? So, yeah, not even, since May. So we do benchmark against regular large social marketing campaigns like the Red Dress campaign or the Under the Influence campaign to try to make sure that we're staying current and that our numbers are equally as impressive. And there's the 51% decrease metric, which is really amazing for a campaign that's only been around for a couple of months. The last one that we're going to talk about is the Army National Guard. And these are our citizen soldiers, and they're very different, and their lifestyle is completely different than those that come home to a base or get to be around their military families and their brothers in arms when they come home. They're deployed more often. They go back to their jobs. They go back to their families. And they do not have the access to the military support system that the Army provides for soldiers. So the Army National Guard had a website and messages around for about 25 years, and it was very stale and very old. And it became very clear during the research phase that the Army National Guard needed something that represented who they were and how different they were from the rest of the services, and also that they were citizens. So there are some unique challenges in trying to streamline communications to what is really a general public group of people who actually serve in the military. And it creates it created, you know, some fun challenges along the way. We knew that the Guard really wanted the same health priorities that all of the other services wanted: healthy living, sexual health, reproductive health, dental health. Dental health is huge in the military, by the way. The number one reason to not be deployed is bad teeth. You cannot go out without your teeth fixed, and in many cases, there's not enough money to get everybody's teeth fixed, so the main reason why a lot of people do not go to war is because their dental health is not good enough, which was a huge shock to me. I had no idea. So there's a lot of conversation about brushing and dental hygiene, and that didn't come up in any of the other, but it's a huge problem in the military because you're getting people from poor areas that don't have access to dentists and good oral health. Sexual health is a big one, and what we also found out about the Guard is that they're extremely vain, as are those in the Navy. All of the imagery for the Guard are, sweaty, handsome, bodybuilding men. We realized that what they really cared about is what they looked like and how they were going to get the girls. Again, another, not a surprise, but surprising, and that's what they wanted with their health. It looks like Men's Health. I mean, the Men's Health magazine, that's really the look and feel of it. Those are the messages that are around it. They wanted access to information that was not through a .mil site, and if you look at any of these campaigns, none of them are government, none of them are military. They're all .orgs or .nets. Nobody wants to put in their file and rank. They want it to be anonymous. They want it to be mobile. So when we designed the Army National Guard material, it is fully optimized for whatever device you pull it up on. So mobility was huge. Accessing the information on their phone or wherever they might be was a big deal for them because they are just like you and I, not on a base. There are themes throughout each one of these campaigns that they are all dealing with full mind and body, readiness, total force fitness, as well as the tobacco, the obesity, the nutrition. So you'll see, healthy recipes and all sorts of fun tips for all of our service members. We actually do discuss as much medical stuff as we can. We don't reinvent the wheel when we don't have to. We use information and resources that are available to us. There's a lot of linking. There is a lot of original content, but it's really around the topics that they're most interested in. So, we believe, and we've seen it in the last 10 years, the military is going to rely heavily on health promotion and social marketing to get their health messages out. When we have found that when a member of the military can take control and have autonomy, they will be a part of an initiative or a campaign. When it is not with the stamp of the DOD or the federal government, they will come forward, they will tell their stories, they will seek treatment, they will talk about suicide prevention, they will talk about traumatic brain injury. Somebody had an NFL slide, I don't remember where it showed up, but the men in the NFL, it came up with suicide. There's a big connection, and it's pretty much the same population, the NFL and the military, dealing with some of those same issues. So we use the NFL a lot in our work. And that's my guy. He's my bouncer, so if you have any questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms.
Mm-hmm. Funding is really trying to help the families of domestic, mm-hmm. How do you reintegrate? That was a topic of another one that you said. The Operation Live Well is interesting because they're actually promoting that at our headquarters, which is now a combined headquarters in Paul Church. It used to be a separate
right, entity.
Building.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of percolating into the consciousness, but it's also, I think, aimed at civilians like me and contractors. So not just
Well, you mean Operation Live Well?
Yeah.
Yeah. The people that work there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's a wellness campaign, both for the people that work for and with.
Oh, my gosh, there's a lot of things you can do in any federal building.
Yes.
Or certainly in any base.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well-being.
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe I can invite Dr. Sills to come on up and we'll have a general panel discussion.
Uh-oh.
Thank you.
Do you have a question?
We have more questions.
We had one question. Okay.
Okay.
I was speaking to Marie, I'm a officer, and I was talking about PTSD, and you refused to call it a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You call it PTS.
There is a movement. I'm not sure that the DOD is going to accept it. There's a lot of conversations about it. I think as long as they're calling it something, I think we'd be happy. The recognition that they have it, that they can speak about it, that they've come forward to talk about it. I think the semantics are, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I've seen the literature both. I mean, we worked with the Defense Centers of Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury, and they still call it PTSD. So DOD is pretty much sticking with that. I mean, I don't know if Navy, Marine Corps,
there's a spectrum.
Disorders can be treated and reimbursed, and it's categorized in the DSM-3. So as a disorder, it gains that.
I thought it from the standpoint that this Marine, this officer, he wouldn't call it a disorder because it's like weak.
Right. Well, so I think there's two sides to it. So on the money side, I'm not sure how they're going to play, how much of the benefits you're going to get for how long, for whatever you're being diagnosed with. So that's one whole discussion. On the human side of it, I think the stigma, unfortunately, is still there for, you tell a wife of a Marine that her husband has PTSD, and they imagine him coming home drooling in a cup, when in fact, it could be so mild and unnoticeable completely, other than doctors being able to see it. There could be sleep irregularities. You know, there could be mild conditions that people have to manage, but I think, what DOD is doing is trying to work with leadership and, the entire, line of leadership to squash that, the stereotypes and the stigma around any kind of traumatic brain injury, whether it be mild or severe. We know that they were being put back out. They're being deployed again without having proper treatment because nobody wanted them admitted, and they didn't get tested, and they wouldn't come forward, and they would lie about whether or not they were having headaches. So I think it's very complicated, which is why I liken it to what's going on in the NFL. There were some of the same issues, but now we're on the other side of that, where people are coming forward because they want the settlement. They want to be recognized for the injuries that they had. So I think the next couple of years are going to be very interesting. To the traumatic brain injury.
We have about 3 to 7 minutes, depending on how long you want to stay, but we do have to be respectful of the next group coming in. I think there's another group coming in. But we have about 3 official minutes for questions. Other questions for our fabulous panelists? One of the perspectives that you gave was that, and this is, I think, why one of the reasons you're here, Ms. Herzog, is because you do not provide data, or minimal data. Communications doesn't equal data. I think we in public health sometimes tend to think that if we barrage the world with staggering strategic statistics, the static and the numbers will speak for themselves and people will change. I've been trying that for a long time. It hasn't really worked all that well, and I took them out of a marketing background after 30 years at Pfizer and doing various things, and we know that you have to package it the right way to get the message across. So, I'd be interested to the other panelists. What do you think about the notion that data communication strategies do not equal data presentation? How does that play out in what you're doing in work with men in general, with your students, with the Native American, Alaskan Native, in your advocacy work? Put everybody on the spot.
Well, issues, male issues, it can be evaluated. So, you know, you can work with anecdotal stories or groups. You know, you may not get funding up front, you know, and that might be prohibitive to do a widespread program, but pilot data can inform evaluation data that can then lead into better opportunities working with people like this sort of scholarship. So.
She has no problem getting money, I assure you. Who's out, Hamilton out. We're very, very successful.
I think that it's a challenge to work with diverse populations, you know, in many different ways. But I think in an earlier talk this morning, one of the things that they were saying as a solution to that was to try to find a level of humor behind anything and to be really engaging and positive toward men's health. And, you know, I think that's probably the most important thing for Native Americans in particular, because we love humor and that's all that's got us through where we are, and I think that's true for many other people.
I'm pointing because one of my colleagues has taught me that men always like their health with a dose of humor.
So humor is really interesting in social marketing, and it's very tricky. There's been a lot of campaigns that have backfired. So one was a college campus drinking campaign, and somehow the message was, last year your college drank 35 Olympic swimming pools filled with beer. And what did they do the next year? They drank 36. Right. So, you know, humor, it has to be the right kind of humor for the right kind of audience. It doesn't always work. The Army National Guard uses humor great, and if you follow the Guard's Facebook page, I have to say I have more fun reading those posts than I do reading, you know, some of my other favorite people on Facebook or YouTube. I actually think the guy that writes our copy for the Army National Guard has something, he has something special, and he really does resonate with the audience. So I encourage you to look at some of those posts. They're really, they're good and they're funny. They do make people brush their teeth and wear condoms and all sorts of interesting things. So, yeah.
Take a lesson from that. We had a big old session about that earlier this week about how the message there should be fun sex, not safe sex.
Yes.
Hi, in my former position, I was at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and the tobacco program, and I was hosting a tobacco treatment specialist kind of trainer in collaboration with the military. It was interesting because some of the other counselors were saying that people tell the folks that they have to quit, and they do because they're in the military. We've asked them to do that, and I was wondering if you had any experience with tobacco.
So we know a few things about tobacco. Yeah, if you're, you know, if your leadership tells you to quit, most of them usually don't, though, because most of them are the leaders are the ones that smoke, and the young guys going in, they smoke because their leaders do, because then they can get that smoking time with their line leader that they would not normally get when they go outside of the barracks and the guy smokes a cigarette, and they can actually smoke a cigarette with somebody that they would never get to spend time with. So we find that going into the military, they smoke less, and when they come out of the military, they have taken it up. And they said, really, the only thing you need to fight a good war is guns and bullets and cigarettes. Cigarettes are a tough thing to stop once you're in the military. They're cheaper there, they sell them for cheaper at the bases, there's all sorts of tobacco relationships. So it would be great if that was the way it was all the way around. I don't think it is. I think that the military will struggle with tobacco like they struggle with alcohol. Although we are learning that you can curb the consequences of alcohol, you can't necessarily curb the consequences of smoking, because unfortunately those are all inside and not the drinking and the driving and the brawls and whatever. So
and they don't show up with cancer until after they retire.
And they're such, you know, they're this particular group does not think ahead. You know, they're living in the moment out there doing their thing. So it is really hard to say, go out, fight that war. Oh, and don't smoke. You know, it is one of the hardest things to deal with, both in the general population and in particular in the military. So, yeah, I would assume if somebody came down and said, gotta quit, maybe they would smoke in front of that guy, I don't know.
Other comments on that?
Yeah.
the authoritative view to stop bad behavior. Other questions?
Just about with all tobacco stuff. Personally, I think it's impossible to stop tobacco use in militaries. I mean, if the Israelis are giving out just for reducing stress in the middle of the war, I have a Marine sign in my class, and he's a great student, but he's telling me about his experience here, and he just came back, and he's had PTSD pretty bad, and he's getting treated for it. But he's like, all they had out there was their tobacco. They had their gun, their tobacco, and they sat and talked, and they chewed, and they smoked, and that's how they got through it. I understand tobacco is terrible for you. However, I mean, sometimes, though, it may not be in the best interest sometimes to be full board take away the tobacco. Perhaps it is an adaptive habit to reduce stress in the middle of eating the heat of things. So that's what, that's anecdotal, of course.
So they are working on other things in the military, the active living, the yoga, the meditation. You know, they're bringing many more things, and it's going to be harder to sell those things as stress relievers in the military, but they are definitely moving towards that. Not in lieu of trying to do cessation programs. I don't know if there's any other, anything you want to add.